Mr. Bevis, reel 3.
What? You mentioned some of the terrifying things that a young boy like yourself had to witness during this time. Can you just describe for me
well,
one or two of the things?
As I said, the worst one was this armoured door that was amidships in the ship. You know, the bulkhead ran the same way as the ship. And there was this armoured door there, and a shell had knocked it clean off its hinges and squashed the, I don't know where it was, one or two. Absolutely squashed they were, as the door fell on them. And we had to erect tackle and get it up and then shovel them, what was there, into a big sheet. We had a big white sheet and just shoveled in what was left there. Blood and hair and...
Quite a job for a young boy.
Yes.
There was also the Lascar seaman, I think you had.
That was in this dockyard when the Comrie Castle came in here. The torpedo had gone straight through her boiler room. And the plates had just wrapped the Lascars in. They were standing the other side of it. And they had to be burned out, you know, burn all the what's name out.
You were up there, I think, for 3 months altogether at Forsyth.
Yeah.
Just over 3 months. One more thing I wanted to ask you about that was, did you get a subsistence allowance to allow you?
Yes. Not commensurate with the others.
With the others?
No, they put us on more or less on labourers' subsistence, apprentices. But still, it was enough. We managed to pay our way, but we wouldn't have done it if it hadn't been for the overtime that we were working.
And in your fourth and fifth years back in Portsmouth again, apprenticeship, you moved on to the more general construction work and repair work of the ships, including dry docking them.
Yes.
I think was the... including, I believe you said, mixing your own paint in those days.
In the paint shop.
Tell me about, because you seem to have been getting practice in every possible sort of way.
Yes. Yes, well, I went in the paint shop, and we were for a time on glass, cutting portholes, you know, the glass in the scuttles. Of course, there's nothing much in there. It's only like a gramophone turntable. Put your what's name on, and an arm comes out with a diamond in, and spin it round, and knock the what's name out. Of course, that glass is about half inch thick. But and then in the same shop, of course, they took you in and showed you the. It was all hand mixing with paddles. You had an old oar and a big vat, and they put the white lead in and the linseed oil and turps. Didn't have any turp substitute, and a dryers, and there you had with this paddle stirring around. Then, of course, they mixed... They did have a machine that mixed up all the red lead. Used to put the white lead in, and then the red lead powder, and this machine spun round. Of course, they used to use all 100 weights of it. Everything was bedded on this red lead. Now I think they use Celestic or something with that. Well, I know they use... because they reckon it was injurious to health, but... Of course, they did have good washing facilities there. That was about the only place in the dockyard that...
They were aware of this possibility at any rate. Did anybody ever complain, or any of the local societies or unions for that matter, ever raise the matter with the dockyard people any time?
Well, they must have done. They've got the facilities that were there. There was that in the galvanising shop. They had, well, not adequate, but they did have a system of drawing the fumes away when they were galvanising.
And during a great part of your shipwright apprenticeship, the Royal Sovereign was being built, and you spent quite a lot of time doing jobs.
Yeah, nearly all my general work was done on there. Ventilation and... As I told you, when they converted her from coal to oil, which meant double riveting all the bunkers, and then owing to the shortage of caulkers, iron caulkers, we done quite a fair time on caulking all this lot.
This was a kind of cheap labour, really, I think you said, too. This was taking advantage?
Yes, because we couldn't go on piecework, because we weren't caulkers. Which rather irked us. And, of course, the pneumatic machines had come in then, but we weren't allowed to use them. All ours was hand caulking.
The question of demarcation wasn't raised in naval dockyards in those days?
No. Well, it was a certain amount, I suppose, but I don't remember any major... No, the shipwrights had adapted, really, from wood to steel.
And you were working quite commonly with steel and iron as well as wood?
Yes.
From time to time, anyway.
Yes, we had all the wood decks and... your masts and yards. Of course, they don't have those now. They're all steel, but...
And throughout a good part of this time you were in your apprenticeship, you were also, as we said, attending classes. But that went on, I think, for 3 years.
Yes.
And one afternoon a week,
yes.
And this included instruction in both the theory, the scientific theory, but also you used the dockyard models to give you insights and things.
Yes. Learned mechanical drawing, which assisted in doing these diagrams in this book I.
And you've got naval history in the way that it was the history of the ship.
Yes. Well, that was one course in there. I never knew why they introduced it, but...
At the end of the 5 years apprenticeship, you had a series of tests. What things did you have to construct or make up or write?
Well, there was a ship that had... I forget her name now. But she was... she had been built, and then the war finished, or was likely to finish. So they mothballed her. And they took us aboard there and gave us some really tough jobs where you get to... your main inlets come in, and you had to... That's in the double bottoms. You've got your main inlet, and then it comes through a sleeve up into the next deck. And we had to make that. And, of course, in confined space, because there's only 2 foot of room, or 3 foot in the double bottom of a ship, and dark. But so that was the type they gave us. Then... after you'd done that, they had a lot of verbal tests, you know, on pick out anything else, what type of joint you'd use for such a woodwork job. Or, but other than that, it was mostly verbal. I see the man was one shipwright, Halifax. I wonder what I've never met him before or since.
And after this, you passed it, obviously.
Yes.
You went to do your basic training before you went off to sea, before you went actually into a ship. You had to do for your probationary year.
Yes. Directly you got that certificate, you marched into the barracks with it, and off you started as any other person joining. And you've done your square bashing and your...
This was in 1918 for you.
Yes.
Right at the end of the war.
Yes.
Or getting on to the end of the war. And the conditions in the barracks actually were pretty terrible, I think you said.
Yes.
Too many men for too few...
Yeah, well, being watch and watch, every other... There must have been at least 500 men in there every night looking for somewhere to sleep, and the bathing and those facilities were bad. No hot water, had to shave in cold. Although what they'd done in those days, you had a resident barber, a civilian barber in there, and he had thousands of... I'll say thousands, he had... hundreds of razors, all sharpened up in his saloon. And everybody used to rush over there and put the old butts on him. And there you were. You just pick up these razors and do you. And he would collect, oh, there was a penny or two, you know, small amount in those days. But all he done was lay the razors down.
And also this business about sleeping, you managed to use your father's...
Yes.
Keeping it quiet, because you...
Oh, yes. Yes, I've been well in the cart.
During this time, this was your early training... You went adrift twice, I believe, both times caused by quite reasonable things.
Getting up too early.
Tell me about this, because it's quite interesting what happened and how it worked out.
Well, the first time, instead of getting aboard, I'd moved into the Terrible out in D-Lock, which is some way out, a quarter of an hour's walk from the gate. Instead of being on board at 7, I was at the gate. So it was about 7:15 when I got aboard. And the ship's policeman came up and asked for this card that we had to leave on the ship when we were out of it. They had to collect when we went aboard. Every time I asked, or he would say, "You want your card?" And when I went to get it, he'd... Yes, and I didn't realise what the implications of this keep on snatching it back was. So he told me to come and have me breakfast. Undoubtedly thinking that I should find out what it was. And I spoke to an old man who more or less took me for a ride, being a new recruit. He said, "You go and see the master at arms and get it." And off I went, because that was the life and death of you, this card, if you didn't have it. And he was there, mustering defaulters, requestmen, pandemonium galore, and I went straight up. I said, "I want my card." He said, "What card?" So he said, "Go in my office." I went in the office and he said, "What's your name?" I told him. He said, "Was your father a chief rider?" I said, "Yes, master." He said, "I knew you when you were that high. I'll get it for you." And then I found out that that was a type of bribery which I hadn't been introduced to.